This is Pete Hansen from the University of Florida. I'm very grateful for the opportunity to participate in this meeting, but unfortunately, I have to participate in kind of an unorthodox manner using this video recording. Just recently, my wife had surgery, and I have to stay at home with her this week. So I'm very grateful to Megan Rolfe for the opportunity to video record my presentation. And I also thank you for your patience in listening to me in this manner rather than the more typical type of extension presentation. Heat stress can have serious effects on the ability of cows to get pregnant, to maintain pregnancy, and produce a healthy calf. And so this is a pertinent topic for this meeting today. What I want to do in my presentation is organize my thoughts about how heat stress affects female fertility around five take-home messages. The first take-home message is that heat stress affects most aspects of reproduction in cattle, but especially fertility, which is mostly what I'm going to focus on today, especially the ability of a cow to get pregnant after insemination by natural mating or by artificial insemination. So we can look at the effects of heat stress on reproduction as really being involved in three different aspects of reproductive physiology. First of all, cows that are heat stressed experience reduced estrus behavior, so that it's more difficult to detect estrus in cows. This is a big problem with artificial insemination, but not with bull breeding schemes. And we can completely eliminate the effects of heat stress in inseminated cows by using fixed-time artificial insemination, by programming ahead of time when cows will be inseminated. So I'm not going to talk much more about how heat stress affects estrus behavior. The main effect, probably the most significant effect of heat stress, is on fertility. Cows that experience hyperthermia, increased body temperature, as a result of heat stress, are less likely to get pregnant after natural or artificial mating than cows that are not heat stressed. And this effect can be quite large in magnitude. The third effect of heat stress that we don't think about very often, not really going to talk about much today, but it's an important one, is that heat stress during pregnancy also affects the growth of the fetus, so that calf birth weight is reduced. And some recent data from the University of Florida suggests that this effects of heat stress on fetal growth persists into adult life. So at least in dairy cattle, animals born as a result of being in utero during periods of heat stress have lower milk yields as adults than animals that were not exposed to heat stress when they were in their mother's uterus. So most of the effects, if not all the effects of heat stress on reproduction, are related to the increase in body temperature that cows experience when they're heat stressed. During periods of severe heat stress, cows are not able to lose all of the heat they produce as a result of metabolism to the surrounding environment, and they heat up. Their body temperature rises. And it's this increase in body temperature, or all the physiological changes the cow undergoes to prevent the increase in body temperature, that are associated with the reduction in estrus behavior, fertility, and fetal development caused by heat stress. So if we can keep cows from getting hyperthermic, we can reduce the effects or prevent the effects of heat stress on reproduction. So it's difficult to say what is the temperature that starts to cause a decline in fertility, but a good ballpark figure is that when cows' rectal temperature exceeds 102.2 degrees Fahrenheit, conception rates start to decline, estrus behavior declines, and calf or fetal development is reduced. So this temperature of 102.2 compares to the normal rectal temperature of cows of about 101.3 to 101.5 degrees Fahrenheit. So we can measure rectal temperature and assess whether or not cows are experiencing heat stress large enough to reduce fertility. More recently, we can measure vaginal temperature, maybe somewhat easier than rectal temperature. I'll talk about that more in a second. Vaginal temperatures tend to be a little higher than rectal temperatures. So a vaginal temperature of about 102.5 indicates that heat stress is severe enough to compromise fertility. An important point to make is that effects of heat stress are much more severe for dairy cows than for beef cows. So most of the literature you read about heat stress relates to dairy cows and not beef cows. So if you're a beef cattle producer, that's a good thing. Your cows are much more resistant to heat stress than dairy cows. So why is that? It's because of the relationship between heat production and body temperature regulation. To maintain body temperature during heat stress, all of the heat produced by the body as a result of metabolism has to be lost to the environment. And as compared to a beef cow, a dairy cow produces a lot of heat. In fact, a lactating dairy cow at peak lactation produces as much energy as human athletes, and they have to lose all that energy to prevent hyperthermia. So let's just consider a human athlete, for example, somebody who rides in the Tour de France. Maintenance requirements for humans are about 2 megacals per day, 2,000 calories per day. When engaged in very strenuous aerobic exercise, such as this Tour de France bicyclist, the caloric requirements go up by about 6 to 8 megacals per day. So this bicyclist is producing 3 to 4 times more heat than a human at rest. And it must lose all that heat to the environment in order to prevent hyperthermia. Well, the same is true for a dairy cow at peak lactation. The average dairy cow produces somewhere around 100 pounds of milk per day at peak lactation. Now, as compared to a human, where the maintenance requirements are 2 megacals per day, in the dairy cow, there are 15 megacals of metabolizable energy. And when they're producing 99 pounds of milk per day, they have an additional metabolic requirement of about 55 megacals of metabolizable energy per day. So these cows, at peak lactation, are producing about 70 megacals of heat per day. In other words, about 4.7 times their maintenance requirements. A lactating dairy cow is producing as much heat, relatively, as a very active aerobic athlete. And so this makes it very difficult for these cows to regulate their body temperature during heat stress. As a result, it's lactation that really makes the cow susceptible to heat stress. These are some data from Florida in the 1980s, just looking at seasonal variation in conception rate for non-lactating heifers, dairy heifers, and lactating dairy cows. So you can see in the lactating dairy cow, conception rates in the summer are less than 20%, whereas conception rates in the cooler months of the year are 40% or above. And this graph then indicates, you know, the magnitude of the reduction in fertility that can occur during heat stress. But look at the heifer. No reduction in fertility in the summer. It's exposed to the same environment as the lactating dairy cow, maybe even a little bit more severe environment because producers tend not to give heifers as much cooling as they do cows. But because this cow is not producing much heat, it's able to lose all of that heat to the environment, maintain a constant body temperature, and not experience reduction in fertility. A beef cow, even a lactating beef cow, is more like a dairy heifer in terms of its heat production than a lactating dairy cow. So as a result, the effects of heat stress on beef cows is much less than for dairy. Here's some data from Oklahoma from the 1980s. Just looking at the calving interval for cows in a spring in blue or fall in red calving season for a variety of different breeds or crossbred cattle. And as you can see, there's no significant difference in calving interval between seasons for any of the breeding groups. So now, of course, these data are difficult to interpret because forage availability and other factors also varies with season. But as compared to the lactating dairy cow we just saw, there's not a big difference in fertility between seasons. Now, that's not to say heat stress has no effect in beef cows. When the environment is very severe, or when there's other physiological or environmental factors that make it hard or that affect cows' heat production, then heat stress effects on fertility occur. Just recently, an experiment was published from Arkansas in which the scientists evaluated the effects of season of calving, fall versus spring, and grazing fescue pastures that were infected with endophyte on cow fertility. So as you know, most fescue contains an endophyte species that, among other things, makes it more difficult for cows to regulate their body temperature. So in this experiment by Caldwell et al., they evaluated the effects of feeding fescue pastures on fertility. So there were three groups of cows that calved in the spring months of the year. So these cows were bred during the hot season of the year, April, May, and June. And then there were two groups of cows with a fall calving season that were bred in October and November, cooler time of the year. One group of cows was fed all the time on pastures that contained fescue that had been genetically modified to not have endophyte infection. And then the other groups were managed so that they either spent 75% of their time on endophyte-infected pastures or 100% of their time on endophyte-infected pastures. And then among the endpoints measured then was calf crop in these five different groups. And the results are shown in this next slide. Here are the three groups that calved in the spring and the two groups that calved in the fall. So the first thing you notice right off is that regardless of the level of endophyte exposure, cows that were bred in the fall had a slightly higher calving rate than cows that were calving in the spring, showing some effect of heat stress, possibly, on cow fertility. Well, look at the effects of endophyte exposure. In the fall, when cows were not heat stressed very much, there was no difference in calf crop between those cows grazing endophyte infected pastures 75% of the time and those 100% of the time. In the spring, in contrast, when cows were grazed 100% of the time on endophyte-contaminated pastures, cow fertility was greatly reduced. Probably because in the spring, these cows had a higher time regulating their body temperature than these other two groups of cows, and fertility was reduced. The other thing you got to think about is the effects of global warming. If the scientific projections are right, it's going to get a lot hotter in most of the world, including in the Great Plains states. So depending on the levels of carbon emissions that are going to occur in the next several years, the average temperature in the summer in the Great Plains is projected to increase somewhere between 3 and 9 degrees Fahrenheit by the year 2100. And that's going to make it more difficult for cows in warm months to regulate their body temperature and to have high fertility. So even though I think heat stress is not a major problem right now for most beef cattle, it can become a greater problem in the future. The second take-home message I want to give you is that heat stress today can compromise fertility many weeks later. So it's not enough to cool this cow on the day of insemination or in the first week of embryonic development and improve fertility. In fact, heat stress can affect the development of the cow's egg many weeks before she ovulates, and in the bull can affect the formation of spermatozoa many weeks before those sperm actually mature and are ejaculated. So there's a long carryover effect of heat stress on fertility. Let's look at that for the female, first of all. It's not so obvious to everybody, but the follicle that ovulates today started growing about 100 to 120 days earlier. So ovulation today is the culmination of a process that took 3 to 4 months. And the follicle and the oocyte, or the egg within the follicle, that develops during this period is susceptible to disruption by elevated temperature. So heat stress at this stage, for example, can compromise the oocyte that ovulates several weeks later. Fertilization is also disrupted by heat stress, and so too is embryonic development, but only until about day 2 to 3 after estrus. At that point, the embryo becomes resistant to elevated temperature. That resistance increases so that by the Moyler or blastocyst stage of development, in other words, about day 5 to 7 of development, the embryo is pretty resistant to the effects of elevated temperature. And this also occurs in bulls. Your own Bob Wedeman from Oklahoma State University showed this very nicely in the 1980s when he exposed bulls to heat stress for an 8-week period of time. During that time, they spent 8 hours every day at 88 degrees Fahrenheit and 16 hours every day at 95 degrees Fahrenheit. And you can see that as compared to the control bulls, there's a reduction in the percent of sperm in the ejaculate that are motile. Well, when heat stress was ended, motility didn't just jump right back up. Instead, it took about 8 weeks for motility to get restored to normal. And that's because heat stress is affecting the very earliest stages of sperm maturation, and it takes about 64 days for a sperm to develop. So sperm that we're just developing here didn't get ejaculated until about 8 weeks later. So there's a long carry. Excuse me. How do we actually determine whether or not cows are suffering from heat stress? Usually, people talk about the temperature humidity index as a way to determine the level of heat stress, but I would argue that's not a very good method because it doesn't consider other environmental factors or the cow itself, how much heat she's producing, what her physiology is. Probably a better way to determine whether or not cows are suffering from heat stress, and I think in many cases a practical way, is to measure body temperature. And I say that even though I know body temperature is not easy to measure in beef cattle. But we now have devices like these little eye buttons that let us determine whether or not cows are experiencing hyperthermia, and if so, when during the course of the day heat stress is occurring. So again, remember, we can estimate whether or not heat stress is affecting fertility by knowing what the body temperature of the cow is. And a body temperature over 102.2 Fahrenheit rectal temperature or 102.5 Fahrenheit vaginal temperature is indicative that cows are experiencing heat stress. What I would like to suggest is the best way to determine whether or not cows are heat stressed is to use a device called the eye button, which is a small temperature recording device about the size of a dime that records body temperature at 1 minute or 10 minute intervals. The data can be easily downloaded into a computer. It's not done remotely. You have to put the I button right up against the little device that you plug into your USB port. But these devices are reusable over and over and over again. And what we do in our hands is take a used Ceder device, cut a little hole in the center of the Ceder, and just place the I button directly in that incision. Sometimes we use aquarium sealant to seal it in. It's probably not really necessary. It's in there pretty firm. You can stick this in a cow for about a week, pull it out, and get a minute-by-minute or 10-minute-by-10-minute measurement of vaginal temperature, and use that information to determine whether or not cows are heat-stressed, and if they are, when during the day they're getting heat-stressed. So here's the information if you actually want to buy an iButton. There are many different iButton models. They're used for a lot of purposes. This 1922L is the one that you should use. It's the most expensive one, about $75 each. But it measures temperature very accurately compared to the other iButtons. Let me show you some data obtained with iButtons. These are data from lactating dairy cows that are managed as a grazing dairy. So they spend all day grazing. And here is the average vaginal temperatures for a group of cows in this management system. And again, if we assume 102.5 degrees Fahrenheit is the temperature at which infertility occurs, we can see that these cows spend a lot of time above that temperature. But we can learn a lot of things about these cows from these data. When are they above the temperature that causes infertility? Well, in the nighttime hours, right, when no cooling devices are present, and Florida is a very cloudy place, so it's difficult for cows to lose heat to the nighttime sky. So oftentimes, dairy cows in Florida are hyperthermic at night. In the morning, when they come into the parlor, they get sprayed, body temperature goes down very quickly, and then when they're let out of the parlor, go back into the pastures, body temperature goes up. But what's amazing is the body temperatures in the afternoon are not really much higher than the body temperatures at night. And then in the afternoon, when they go into the parlor, there's another decrease in body temperature, but of a smaller magnitude, probably because it's hotter out in the afternoon. But why is this dairyman doing a fairly good job regulating body temperature during the afternoon? Well, the answer is that cows are grazing under an irrigation pivot. So they follow this pivot around in the pasture and receive some degree of cooling, not enough to prevent hyperthermia, but enough to minimize the hyperthermia as they graze during the day. So I would submit we can use these iButtons to get a better idea of when cows are getting heat stressed and maybe come up with some management tools to reduce the magnitude of this. The fourth take-home message that I want to give you is that the best solution long-term to reduce the effects of heat stress is to use cattle that are genetically adapted to hot environments. And fortunately, there are many different breeds of beef cattle that have acquired genes that let them better able to regulate their body temperature. This is a picture that always fascinated me when I took it and that I show quite often. This is a pasture from the old USDA subtropical agricultural experiment station in Brooksville, where they were looking at effects of different breeds of cattle or examining the effectiveness of production systems with different breeds of cattle. So in this pasture on a hot summer day are three breeds of cattle. Brahman, you can see all these Brahmins are, some of these Brahmins are out in the sun. Then Senepol, another thermal tolerant breed. Again, some of these are out in the sun. and some are in the shade. And then there's a third breed here, Angus. And where are the Angus? Well, they're all under the tree. They're less able to regulate their body temperature than the Cenepole or the Brahman. And we can use these genetically adapted animals in crossbreeding schemes or other genetic schemes to reduce the magnitude of heat stress effects on other aspects of cow function. This is a slide from Brooksville just demonstrating the differences in these different breeds of cattle to regulate their body temperature during the summer or during the winter. So here we have two breeds that I would consider not thermal tolerant, Angus and Hereford, and then Brahmins, a thermal tolerant breed, Cenepole, which is from the Caribbean, another thermal tolerant breed, and then a cross of Hereford Cenepole or Cenepole Hereford, and then another breed of cow called the Romo Sinuano, which is derived from Criollo cattle in Central America. You can see all of these breeds that I would consider thermal tolerant have a lower body temperature than the two breeds that were developed in Northern Europe. All of these cows have body temperature above what I would call the temperature that causes infertility, but that's a little bit artificial. These cows are getting run through a chute and they're very nervous. That increases their body temperature. So even in December, most of them have body temperatures above 102.2 that would cause infertility. And the Brahman, which is probably the most nervous of all, has the highest temperature. So running cows through chutes increases their body temperature, probably contributes a little bit to infertility, and also makes it difficult to measure body temperature and stress. I see my time is coming to an end here. The last point I want to make is that there's a limited number of reproductive management techniques that we can use to bypass the effects of heat stress on fertility. But there's one that works very good, and that's embryo transfer. The reason it works so well goes back to this issue of when the oocyte and later the embryo is susceptible versus resistant to heat stress. As I mentioned before, beginning about day 2 to 3 after estrus, this embryo begins to acquire resistance to heat stress. And by the blastocyst stage of development, when the embryo is ordinarily transferred into the cow, the embryo is very resistant to elevated temperature. So doing embryo transfer results in the placement of a thermal tolerant embryo into the recipient, thereby bypassing all the effects of heat stress on the oocyte and early embryo and leading to a adequate pregnancy rate as compared to AI. So here are some data from Brazil. Brazil's in the southern hemisphere, so everything's backwards. The months we think of as being hot are actually cold. If you look at cows inseminated by AI, and these are dairy cows, there's thousands of cows in this data set. During the cool months of the year, pregnancy rate is high, at least high for a dairy cow. And there's no difference between AI and embryo transfer. Then in the summer, pregnancy rate declines if cows are artificially inseminated. But if cows are receiving an embryo via embryo transfer, there's no decline in pregnancy rate. So embryo transfer has completely bypassed the reduction in fertility caused by heat stress tolerance. Well, that concludes my presentation. Thanks again for your attention. I'm sorry I'm not able to take questions directly, but I'll leave my contact information up in the next slide, and I'd encourage you, if you have any questions or points you want to make with me, to please email me, which is the preferable way, or call me, and we can discuss the issue further.